Today's shiur is Masechta Ksubos Daf Pei, and we will begin on Daf Ayin Tes Amud Beis at the Mishnah at the bottom of the Amud. Says the Mishnah, just two words of introduction. One is a halacha that we've discussed many times, particularly in this parak. The Nichsi Malug that a woman brings into the marriage, the halacha is that the principal, the Nichsi Malug themselves, remain the wives, however the payrois, the profit, the produce, go to the husband. Also, there's a Mishnah Masechta Bava Metzia, Daf Kuf Aleph Amud Aleph, that discusses the following question. Someone owns a field that's being left fallow. It's being left, nobody's working on it. And I walk by and I see your field is being left deserted. And I am a person that knows how to work the field. And I work the field. So the shaila is, what am I entitled to for doing that labor? So the halach, the Mishnah says, Masechta Bava Metzia is, if it's a field that's typically worked on, then I deserve to be paid as an oris, a sharecropper, which we know the halach throughout Shas is, there's a typical rate, 20%, 30%, 40% that I would receive. If, on the other hand, it's a field that's not typically worked on, and I anyway worked on your field, then I deserve to recoup my expenses. Says the Mishnah. If somebody spends money on his wife's nechse malug, so the halacha is, even though I invested a lot and ate very little, or vice versa, kima, I invested very little, v'ochel harbe, and I ate much, the halacha is masha hoitzi hoitzi, or masha ochel ochel. Whatever I put in, that's whatever I spent, and whatever I took out, I took out. And as Rashi explains the Gemara, here we're dealing with a situation, the Mishnah, here we're dealing with a situation where the couple is getting divorced. And now she's going to get back her nechsi malug, and their relationship is terminated. And he says, you know, I spent so much money in the field, and now I have nothing to show, because I really didn't take out that much. Or vice versa. She says to him, you took out so much from the field and you put in so little. So the Mishnah says, if he put into the field, it doesn't make a difference. If he took out even the most minimal amount, which the Gemara is going to discuss in a moment, he doesn't deserve to recoup his investment. Actually, the machloik is the Pnei Yeshua and the Afla, that perhaps the Mishnah could be referring to another case, where a husband says, I want to look at every year individually. And this year, I invested a lot and took out very little. Or vice versa. The wife says, you invested very little and you took out a lot. And the Mishnah is telling us, according to some Mefarshim, the Pnei Yeshua, that the husband can't make that type of claim. Hafla disagrees. He says that's not the case of the Mishnah. So that's the din of the Mishnah. However, says the Mishnah, Hoitzi v'layochel, if he only put money into the field and did not take anything out of the field, there the halach is yishba kama hoitzi, he should swear how much money he put into this field, v'yitoil, and he could get back that investment. And as we will learn in Mitzvah Shem and the Gemara, provided that the investment, it doesn't exceed the profit. Because that certainly she's not obligated to pay. There are a number of shailas the Mefarshim ask on this Mishnah. One is Rabbeinu Yoina. The Rabbeinu Yoina discusses a situation. Does it make a difference if he invested and then ate, or he ate and then invested? So Rabbeinu Yoina says it doesn't make a difference. Which the Rabbeinu Yoina's comments are relevant to another shaila, which is Machloikas Achroinim. What would be the halacha if the wife brought 10 fields in as Nechse Malug? And this specific field, the husband invested and didn't take anything out of. But there are other fields he did eat. Do we look at it as a package deal, or do we look at each field individually? Most Achronim say that we look at it as one big package. And there are two rayas to their opinion. One is, if each field is to be looked at separately, so then why doesn't the Mishnah give us the parameters how we divide each field separately? The fact that, even though the Mishnah many times in Shas does go into explaining borders and boundaries, and our Mishnah doesn't make any reference to that, is a raya that we look at all the fields as one package deal, and as long as he invested in one field and took out from one field, that takes away his rights to recoup his investment. Also, the Rebbeinu Yoina is a raya, because Rebbeinu Yoina says it doesn't make a difference if the investment preceded eating or after. If it depends on each field separately, it should make a difference. However, there are achronim that say that we look at each field separately. Also, as Tosfos in Daf Pei mentions, this is a very interesting phenomenon. The Mishnah says that he swears how much he spent, and then he collects as much as he spent, or up to certain limits. Typically in Halacha, it's the other way. The woman would have to swear that he didn't spend, and then he would not be entitled. So the Mefarshim explained that this is an exception to the rule. However, the Mefarshim do say, the Rishonim already say, that what will be the Halacha if the woman, he says, I spent $100. And she says, no, you only spent $50. Then the halacha would change, that she has to swear that he only spent $50, and he only would be entitled to $50. So the Mishnah said that even if he just took out very little, that's enough to deprive him of his right to recoup his investment. Ask the Mishnah of Kama Kima, how much is very little? Omer of Asi, afila groigris achas. If he ate one dried fig, however, v'ushach l'derech kavod. As Rishon explained, derech kavod doesn't mean that he ate it on the run, just standing in the field. He ate it by the table, like a mensch. Amrav Abba, Amri Beirav, afila shigrid tamri. Shigrid tamri means a cake of dry dates. And Rashi and Tosfos and Rishonim go into great length to discuss that isn't a cake of dried dates more than one dried fig? So what's Rav Abba saying? If one dried fig is considered derech kavod, certainly a cake of dried dates is considered derech kavod. So the Rishonim explain that typically which type of dates did they dry? Dates that were of poor quality or dates that weren't ripe. So yes, you may have many dates in a cake of dates, and here you have only one fig. But this one fig is a good fig, and these dates are poor quality. Boy Rabibi, chufts to the tamri. If you have the dates that are left over after you make beer out of dates, and he ate them derech kavod, is that considered ochel kimo or not? Mai, what is the halacha? Teiku. Ask the Gemara now. Lo yochel derech kavod mai. What would be the halacha if the husband ate, but it wasn't eaten derech kavod? Should we understand the Mishnah to teach us that you could eat as much as you want, as long as you don't eat it derech kavod, that means you didn't eat? Says the Gemara, Amu Ula, Pliga by Trey Amaroi B'Marova. That is the subject of Machloikus Amaroi B'Net Yisrael. Chad Amu B'Isser, one says that if he ate an Isser worth of fruit, even Shloi Derech Kavod, that means he ate, V'Chad Amu B'Kedinner, a dinner amount. And actually the Mefarshim point out that this Machloikus is quite extreme, because in every dinner, there are 24 Isser. So the difference of these opinion, one is 24 times greater than the other one. Omer Dayanim B'Pedisa. The Dayanim of P'Pedisa, and Rashi says that the Gemara teaches us in Masechet Sanhedrin that the Dayanim P'Pedisa are Rapapa Bashmul, Ova Rav Yehuda Ovda B'Chavil Izmairis. That even if one fed his animal branches from the field, that's called that he ate from the field. What is the basis for Rav Yehuda's opinion? Rav Yehuda L'Tameh. We all remember learning Masechet Baba Basra, Perek Cheskes Habatim. The Gemara, the Mishnah and the Gemara there discusses at great length, if I'm on a field that you owned, and now you come and you say to me, this is my field. So the right thing and the best thing should be, I should take out the deed showing that you sold me the field. But the Mishnah discusses, let's say, you know, it's difficult to hold on to papers forever. So the Mishnah says that if I was on the field for 3 years, would you never protesting? So I have a chazaka, and therefore, even though if I can't show the deed, I still say that this field is mine, and the halacha is that it's mine. Says of Yehuda, Achla Orla. Let's say that I was on the field eating Orla produce, which is Osir. So what does Orla mean? This way Rashi and Tosfos explain. Orla means that although the fruit of Orla is Osir, branches are not Osir. So I was giving my animals to eat branches. Or shvis, it's a Shemitah year. I'm not allowed to eat the fruit, but I'm allowed to use the branches. Or kloim. And as the Mefarshim explained, the case of kloim, that the branches, we have a vineyard, grapes, which vineyard grows grapes, another fruit was grafted onto that tree, and the amount of kloim in those grapes now is greater than a ratio of 200 to 1. So the grapes become prohibited to eat, but the vine doesn't have that ratio and it's still mutter. And I gave my animal to eat this different types of branches. Hareza chazaka. That could serve as a chazaka. So why we see according to Yehuda, the eating of an animal is considered eating. So similarly in our Mishnah, if the husband fed the animal these branches, it's interesting, the Mefarshim say, who eats branches? Elephants eat branches. So if a husband fed the animal those branches, that is a situation where he had hanor from the field. There's a machloikas rishonim. Could all 3 years be early years? Could all the years be klayim years? Or to achieve a chazaka, we said a moment ago, we need 3 years. So only one of the years could be early year. Only one of the years could be klayim. But to establish a chazaka completely on Ola and completely on klayim, even Rabbi Yehuda wouldn't agree. But certainly Rabbi Yehuda agrees that eating of an animal can help establish a chazaka. And similarly, in our Mishnah hold, the eating of the animal means that the husband benefited from the field. Now there's another machlokes rishonim. When we say that the animal ate, and that means that the husband benefited from the field, how much does the animal have to eat that it should be considered that he benefited? Some rishonim say, the animal, there's no difference, covered, not that are covered. The animal's an animal. So as soon as the animal ate from the field, it means I benefited from the field. Other Rishonim suggest that every eating of an animal, by definition, is considered Shaloi Kedar covered. It's an animal. And therefore, the same shear that the Gemara just identified for Shaloi Kedar covered, the Machloikas, the Ikeisr or Kediner, would have to be the shear by an animal. Says the Gemara another halacha. We know, we've discussed this halacha many times, a father has a right, midoraisa, to marry off his daughter. But let's say we have a girl who's an orphan, so her mother, her brothers, may marry her off. However, the halacha there is, since those kedushin are only a kedushin de rabbanon, the girl has a right to be maman. She has a right to walk away from the marriage until she's a gedoyla. Says the Gemara, Amar of Yaakov, Amar of Chizda, Hamaitzi haitzos anichse ishtay ktana. If somebody invests in the nuchsim alug of his wife who's a ketana, and the kedushin were only a kedushid rabbanon, their halacha is k'maitzi al nuchse achadami. Their halacha doesn't follow the halacha that we learned in our Mishnah, that as soon as the husband took out any amount, he can't recoup his investment. My tama of the barabbanon takanta kech deloina sedinim. And the explanation is very simple. When according to the halacha, a husband could divorce a wife. A wife can't divorce a husband. So if a husband invests in the field, he doesn't have to worry his wife is going to walk away. She doesn't have the power to divorce him. Only he has the power to divorce her. Miun is the one exception where the wife could break the marriage. So Chazal saw that if a husband is going to invest in the field of a ketana, and he's always going to have in the back of his mind that his wife could walk out of the marriage, what's he going to do? He's going to invest very little and take out very much. And he'll harm the field. He'll ruin the field. That's why Chazal said under these circumstances, he could always recoup his investment. However, the Rishonim point out, he could only recoup his investment after we deduct the amount of payers he ate. So let's say he made an investment of $100 and he took out already $50 worth of payers that he ate, he only would be entitled to $50. We can't have a situation that he should get back his entire investment plus the payers. That would be entirely unfair.
But if he invests
$108, $200? Then he's a smart guy. Says the Mishnah. Says the Gemara. There was a woman who received an inheritance of 400 zuz. It was a lot of money, but was very far. In those days, they didn't have a days of wire transfer. That if I had money far away, they could just transfer the money into my account. If you wanted to get the money, you had to literally go and get it. Says the Gemara. Azul Gavra, so her husband went, Afik Shismeya, and spent 600 zuz, and Isa Abameya, to bring back this $400. Bahadi the Kasi, as he's coming back, it's Trichle Chad Zuz. He had no money in his pocket, and he needed a dollar, he needed a zuz. So he went and took shokuminayu, he took from this wallet, from this envelope of 400 zuz, he took out one zuz. Also kamed Rav Ami. And now he wants to recoup his investment, that he spent all this money on bringing this 400 zuz. Amalei, so Rav Ami says, Masha hoitzi hoitzi, Masha achal achal. He said, this is a case of our Mishnah, that as soon as the husband had any benefit from the Nichsi Malug, he's no longer entitled to recoup his investment. So since he took out this one zuz, he's not entitled to recoup his investment. Amalei, so Amalei Rabbanu Rav Ami, and Rabbanu said to Rav Ami, and the way that we should explain the Gemara, it wasn't that there's a machloikis here. They told Rav Ami, you misunderstood the story. Hani Mili, what is the situation our Mishnah is referring to? Hani Mili, Heichel, the Ochel Peira, that if I'm eating the produce that grows, if the husband eats the produce that grows out of the Nechse Malug, he's not entitled to recoup his investment. Ha Karnakachel, he didn't get any benefit. He was just taking one of the zuzim of this 400 zuz. Vaitzahi. And as the Rishonim explained, it's as if he didn't spend 600 zuz to get the 400 zuz. It's as if he spent 601 zuz to get that 400 zuz. Said Rav Ami, if that's the case, so we have a situation where the husband expended money and didn't benefit from the Mechsi Malug, where our Mishnah taught us that then the Aloch is, he should swear how much he invested, and then the Aloch is, he could take back what he invested. So the Mefarshim ask, not at the Gemara, not even Rav Ami agrees that he's entitled to get his investment. What is he entitled to? There's a three-way machloikas ha-mefarshim I saw in explaining the Gemara. Some mefarshim say that how much is he entitled? That, as we said, money in Bechuzoi was far away. So if I came to you and I said to you, I have money in Bechuzoi, I have 400,000 Bechuzoi, far away, how much are you willing to pay for me to get that money? In other words, how much are you willing to pay to take ownership of that money? So certainly you're not going to pay 400 zuz because there's expense and there's difficulty in getting it. So you'll say, I'll pay $300, I'll pay $200. So in the business world, it's called factoring. So that's only as much as the husband is entitled to. That's one opinion. It's the Rajbi's opinion. Others say he's entitled to 400 zuz because his expense cannot exceed the value, but it can equal the value. So he's equal to he's worth 400. Others, that flaw suggests that the case that the Gemara here refers to is where the husband specifically went to his wife and said, I'm willing to undertake the travel and the expense of bringing the money. And she signed the harshah. She signed an authorization slip that you could do, and whatever expense you have, I will have to reimburse you. And the halacha is that she ends up losing, and she would have to pay the 600, even though she only ends up with 400. Yish b'kama hoit siviyito, we learned in the Mishnah. Omer of Asi, v'hu sheyesh shvach, so as Rashi helps us understand the Gemara, Rav Asi here makes an ambiguous statement. And the ambiguous statement, says Rashi, can be interpreted in one of two ways. It could either be interpreted to mean that even though we learned in the Mishnah that if the husband didn't take out any benefit, he could recoup his expenses. But the Mishnah says he has to swear. Says Rav Asi, you know when he has to swear? Only if those expenses equal or exceed the profit. But if they're below the profit, then he wouldn't have to swear. So actually, according to that interpretation of Rav Asi, Rav Asi is actually being lenient on the husband. Another way of interpreting Rav Asi's statement is that Rav Asi means to say that if the expenses exceed the profit, he's only entitled to as much as the profit was, not to get back all of his expenses. That's a chumrah against the husband, that he can't get back all of his expenses, he can't get back all of his investment, he only can get back as much as the profits are equal. So now the Gemara wants to know, l'may hilchasa, how do we interpret Rav Asi's words? In this lenient way towards the husband, or in this stringent way to the husband? So first Rav says, Abai says, Shema yishvach yasa otzah, he interprets it leniently for the husband. That if the profit exceeds the investment, the loch is noitlos haitzah b'loi shvur. That he's entitled to take, there he doesn't have to swear. Amle Rava, says Rava to Abaya, if that's what Rav Asi meant, in ken asil arumi. He says, let's think about it. Let's say the profit in this field was $100. The husband really only spent $20. So what's he going to do? He's going to say he spent 90. If he spent only 90, it's less than the profit. And he won't have to swear. And as the Rishonim explained, the shvur that has to be taken in our Gemara is a very serious shvur. It's a shvur of Nikitas Chefetz. He has to hold on to a Sefer Torah. People typically won't lie under those circumstances. But just to say a lie, you know how people are. So here we're setting up a situation for the husband to lie. He'll always say it's a dollar less or a little less than the profit when really he spent much less. So that doesn't make sense. Therefore, Rava says, the way to understand Rav Asi is, Shem Hoysa Shvach, that if he spent more than the profit, he only gets as much as the profit is, even though his investment was more, and that he gets back, he still has to swear. Ubishvur. Ask the Gemara, Ibailhu, Baal Shahoyed Arisan Tachtav. The husband doesn't want to work, so he sends sharecroppers in his place. And as we said at the beginning of our shear, sharecroppers are entitled to a portion, to a percentage of the crops. So now the question is, what is the payment that has to be made to the sharecroppers? Is it a dat of the Baal Nochus? Do we say that the sharecroppers, and this is the way Tosfos, the bottom Tosfos in Amid, explains the Gemara, a sharecropper that's hired by the husband recognizes that there's a situation where the husband may not get paid. The case of our Mishnah, where he puts money into the field, takes produce out, and they get divorced. And every sharecropper learns the Daf Yomi and knows that halacha. And when he accepts this job, he takes that risk into consideration. Adata the Baal Nochus, and therefore historically Baal, if it will be a situation where the husband is not entitled to recoup his investment, Eskal Kahu, they also will not be entitled to recoup their salary. Adilma, the sharecroppers aren't getting involved between the husband and the wife. If there was a divorce, all these halachas, they know they did a job, adapted the aranachas, they came in and they worked on the field, and they're entitled to whatever they're entitled. Va'araki kaima, larisa kaima, they're entitled to their percentage. Maskev la Rava asks Rava, why is this different than the Mishnah that we discussed at the beginning of this year? The Mishnah Masechta Bava Metzia, Daf Kuf Aleph Amud Aleph, that the Mishnah says that if I go and I work on your field, even though you never hired me, the halach is shamiloi, we evaluate how much that was worth. Since I went in without permission, I always end up on the lesser hand, but I am entitled to something. And in fact, I saw the Paiskim ask a very interesting shaila. What would be the halacha? It was sitting in shul, and there's a child, a boy in shul sitting, wasting his time. And I go over to this boy, and I sit with him, and I learn with him, instead of him just sitting, wasting his time. Do I have a right to say to the boy's father, you know, I learned with your son. I deserve to get paid. Tutors get paid very well. I deserve to get paid as a tutor. It's a shayla in the paiskim. So here too. So what's the halacha? Answers the Gemara. Hasam leke inish the tarach. There, so there's nobody else that would have worked on the field. And since there's nobody else that works on the field, this sharecropper, even though he was never hired, that went to the field, is entitled to get his shear. However, hacha ikabal the tarach. Here, the wife says, I don't need you to work. As far as I'm concerned, my husband should have worked. My havala, what's the halacha? Amar Rav Huna b'Reider Yeshua, chazinan. The way to evaluate this shaila is as follows. Ibal arusu, if the husband is truly someone who could work on the field, so halacha is istalik lubal, istalik lahu. The wife says, as far as I'm concerned, my husband should have worked on the field. He went and hired you, that's not my business. And as long as the husband took something out of the field, she doesn't have any massive amount with them. On the other hand, ibal lav arasu. So the wife can't honestly say, I expected my husband to do it. Husband does not work on a field. There, arala risa kaimi, the field is a field that's subject to have outside workers work on it, and therefore she would have to pay them what they deserve it of. So I saw the Rajba ask the following shaila. Not that the Gemara made this point, that there's a difference if the husband is a person that can work in the field versus if he's a husband that is unable to do that. We just quoted a Mishnah Masechta Bava Metzia. The Mishnah Masechta Bava Metzia says that if I have a field, let's say I have a field and I'm not doing anything with it, and therefore, and then people come and work on my field, they're entitled to some sort of wage. We're not going to go into the details how we evaluate it. It's not our sugya. Why don't we make the following difference? That it should make a difference. If I'm a person that could have worked on the field, so I should say to them, I don't need you. I could have done it myself. Only if I'm a person that can't work on the field, just like Al Gemara. So the Rajba says a beautiful nafgamina. The Rajba says like this. A wife could say, I married this husband and brought a nichsim alug with the understanding that he's going to work on the field. And that one of the benefits of me getting married to him is that he's going to take care of the field and I won't have to hire outside workers. So therefore, she has a right to say that if the husband could do it, I don't have to pay the sharecroppers. But if I own a field, even if I'm a person that's very capable of working on the field, the fact is I didn't work on the field. And the sharecroppers did work on the field and they deserve it of their wage. Ask the Gemara another shaila. As we said at the beginning of the shir, the arrangement that exists in every Jewish marriage, not in our world so much anymore, but in times of Chazal this was prevalent, that the wife brings in the nichsim melug, and the husband has to work on the field and is entitled to the payers. And as the most Rishonim explained, that was the arrangement. That's the understood arrangement that exists between a husband and a wife. Other say, the Reini Yoyin explains, the way to understand the arrangement is that the husband is moichel. He forgives his wife the amount that he's entitled to for working on the field because he's getting payers. So now, this is the way the Rosh explains our Gemara. Certainly, a husband can't go and sell payers that don't exist. On the other hand, says the Rosh, if every year there are payers that are realized from this field, and the husband goes and sells those payers and brings the money home, so what's the difference if he brings home payers or brings home money? Money may be better because you can buy whatever you want with the money. Here the Gemara is referring to a situation where the husband sold the rights to this karka to a customer for many years. He took a one-time payment, and for that this buyer will have the rights to this karka, to the fruit that this karka produces for many years. Ma'aminin. The husband has every right. He's entitled to receive the payers, and he's selling that privilege to someone else. Adilma, or perhaps, why did Chazal say that the husband is entitled to the payers? Mishum revach deisei. Chazal wanted there should be Baruch Hashem and an abundance of payers in the house. And therefore Chazal said that all the payers go to the husband. What's he going to do with all these payers? He's going to bring them home every year, and Baruch Hashem, they'll have what to eat. Avol zvuni, loy, to go sell them, and that the family should be deprived of a yearly income of these payers, Chazal never allowed. So says the Gemara, Yehud b'mreim m'shmei d'rava, mash as asli. The sale is valid. Rapapa m'shmei d'rava, loy asv loy klum. The sale is invalid. Amra papa, this that we're extrapolating, that Yehuda Bar Mareima said that the sale is invalid, we never even heard Yehuda Bar Mareima say it explicitly. We just extrapolated it. Because there was the following story. There was a woman that married a man, and she brought into the marriage for Nichsim Melug two maids. What is the halacha on those maids? The maids remained the wives, but their work, or the payers, goes to the husband. And this is a difficult story. The husband went to marry the second wife, which before the Chayim Rabbeinu Gershon was perfectly permissible. And what did he do? He went, and the first wife brought in two shifchas. He took one of those shifchas and gave it to his second wife. So the first wife comes complaining. Not only did he take a second wife, but one of my shifchas he gave to her. Tzofcha. And she was upset. and he didn't pay attention to a complaint. Man dechaz esavur, the one that saw Yehuda Memorema's actions held mishim esavur masha asasli. The husband has a right to do with the payers whatever he wants, but that's not the reason, says the Gemara. For Lahi, that isn't the reason. Mishim revach besa. What is the point of the shivchas? The point of the shivchas is that they should do work in the house. So if he brings a second wife into the house and she's living in the same house and the shivchas is working for her, so the house has the benefit. So therefore, he didn't do anything wrong. But it could well be that in the case that we're discussing, Yehuda Mamarema would have agreed that the sale is not valid. So the Ritva makes a very interesting observation. From here we see, says the Ritva, that in the times where we're allowed to take two wives, not only was a husband allowed to take a second wife, he was allowed to bring her into the same home where the first wife lived. You would think that the first wife should say, it's bad enough you're taking a second wife, but I don't want to share the same home. Here we see they could share even the same home. There's an interesting, it's hard to repeat, but it's Beis Yosef. Beis Yosef says a very interesting psak. Again, in the times where a husband was allowed to marry a second wife. He says that let's say your husband gave his first wife jewelry, and she doesn't wear it. She has enough jewelry. She doesn't like the jewelry. And now he goes and marries a second woman. He could take that jewelry from the first wife and give it to the second wife to marry, to wear. Now we know why Rabbeinu Gershom made his din. Says the Gemara, V'helchasa, the halacha is, Baal Shemocha Karka L'Peiris, if a husband did make the sale, Lo'yosef Le'Klom, it's void. However, we have a machloikus why. My tam, Bayom, Chshina Shem Atachsef. So why do we should explain Abaya's concern is as follows. If a husband sells this karka for its peiris for a number of years, the buyer is aware that this deal could end at any time. Because if this marriage terminates, she'll take back the field. So what's he going to do? He's not going to take proper care of the field. Because he wants to get out of it as much as he can. And there's a concern that he won't take proper care of it. Rav Amar. Rav says the concern of Mishim Revach Beisot, as we learned on Tapet Amid. We want that there should be an abundance of fruit in the home. And if he sells the rights, so we won't have enough fruit in the home. My benayu, says the Gemara, Ike benayu, Ara the Mak of Lamasa. Let's say this property is near the city. So if the concern is that the buyer is going to mistreat the field, we don't have to worry. The wife is going to go every day to make sure that the buyer is taking proper care of the field. But if the concern is Revach Beisa, we don't have Revach Beisa. Inami Baal Orosu. There's two pshatim how to understand this. One pshat is that an interesting arrangement. The husband sells the field, and then he becomes the Oros. That's how the Lunil learns Gemara. So since he's the one that's working on the field, he'll make sure not to abuse it. So if the concern is abuse, there's no concern. If the concern is that there's no Revach Beisa, the concern is there. Others say, another pshat, just the opposite. The husband is a sharecropper elsewhere. So the concern for Revach Beisa doesn't exist. Because he's bringing home plenty of fruit from his other job. The concern of tachsif, that the buyer is abusing the field, does exist. Inami, another nafkamina, is zuzi v'ka'ovet ba'iska. The husband has plenty other opportunity to bring home fruit. Because he's a big businessman and he does a lot of business. So the concern for Revach Beisa doesn't exist. He's Baruch Hashem bringing a nice income home. But the concern that the buyer is abusing the field does exist. However, says the Rosh, in the name of Rav Haigoy, that let's say the field that she owns, the Nechsim Malug, is very far away, and the cost of the transporting the fruit from that field is very steep to bring it back to where they live, there everybody will agree that he's allowed to sell it, because it doesn't make sense. The investment of transporting it is not worth that cost. Our first mishnah of the Perek discussed a woman who's an arusa or an asua. Could she sell her property under what circumstances? Our mishnah discusses now shemeres yavam. We know shemeres yavam is a woman whose husband died and she's waiting for yibum. And a shemeres yavam shenafla nechasim. This shemeres yavam that got property while she's a Shemeres Yavam. Says the Mishnah, Moedim Beisham Beisalul, everybody agrees, Shemecheres V'Nesenes V'Kayom, that she's allowed to sell those properties and the sale is valid. And there's two explanations why. Taisvis, at the beginning of the Perek, differentiates between an Arusa and a Shemeres Yavam. The Arusa is most likely to end up with Nesuin. And therefore, it's really considered somewhat the husband's already. A Shemeres Yavim, there's a 50-50 chance. She may end up with Yibum, but she may end up with Chalitza. So therefore, the husband's rights to the field are much weaker, and therefore, she certainly could sell it. The Meiri takes a different approach. He says an Arusa is considered an Eishes Ish. The halacha is if an Arusa has an adulterous affair, she's Mechuyav Misa. A Shemeres Yavam, if she has relations with another man, is only Chiyav Lav. So it's obvious that the relationship between an Arusa and her Oris is much stronger than the relationship between a Shemeres Yavam and the Yavam, and therefore the halachas are very different. Mesa. What happens if a woman dies while she is in a Shemeres Yavam? So there are three objects to discuss. There's the ksuba, that the husband, that the first husband, or then the second husband would have to pay her. There's the nechsei tzoyim barzel, and there's the nechsei maluk. So what's the halacha? Mayasa b'ksubasa or b'nechasim ha'nechnasim v'yotzei ima. Nechasim ha'nechnasim v'yotzei ima is another way of saying nechsei maluk. B'shamei omrim yechloiku yorshe habal im yorshe ha'av. And the way Rashi explains the Gemara is that Beshamai, when he's, this is the Gemara Masechta Yevamos, is Beshamai is only referring to the Nechsei Malug. As far as the Nechsei Tzoyim Barzel, and as far as the Ksub is concerned, according to Beshamai, they go to the Yavam. The Nechsei Malug are divided. Ubeisalamim, Nechasim Techeskasan, we leave everything status quo. Ksuba, Becheskas Hayorshei Habal, the ksuba remains with the husband. Nechasma nechnos v'yotzi imo. The nechsei tzoyim barzel a becheskas yorshei av, which means ha yorshim. And the mefarshim ask why a ha yorshim called yorshei av? It should be called yorsheha, because as we're going to learn, as we learned in Masechta Yevamos, there's really a question: who are ha yorshim? Is the yavim ha yorish, or is a father a yorish? So in order to avoid confusion, the Mishnah is clear in telling us who her Yarshim, her father. Hinich Achiv Maz. Now the Mishnah begins another din. The din that the Mishnah now is going to discuss is that the halacha is that the second husband, the Yavam, if the first husband left assets, doesn't have to write a new ksuba. Rather, the assets of the first husband are meshubed, there's a lien on them for a ksuba. But there's a very interesting difference between we look at the yavam's responsibility to his yavama and a husband's responsibility to his wife. They both have a responsibility of a ksuba. But the halacha treats it very differently. A husband can have assets. He could buy, he could sell. When he dies or the marriage is terminated, he has to pay the ksuba. And yes, if he doesn't have any liquid assets, then the wife has a right to go back to the people she sold his assets to and claim back the money. But that doesn't prevent him from doing business with all of his money, with all of his assets. A yavam doesn't have that right. And a yavam, the halacha is, all of the money that he gets from his brother, the halacha is, has to be set aside and can't be touched. We'll discuss in the Gemara if there are any eitzes, if there's any way of working around this, but it can't be touched because they're all obligated, there's a lien on all of them to pay a ksuba. And therefore says the Mishnah, Heniach Echav Mos, if the brother left cash, this is the sheet of Rameya, the Rameya says that even cash, which is metatlin, is meshubah to the ksuba, so what should the Yavim do? Yilokch ben karka, he should transfer the cash into property, v'roichel peiris, the peiris hili, the yavam, and the karka is meshubah to the ksuba. Peiris hatlushim in the karka. Let's say the brother left fruit. Again, according to a mayor, even metamplin are meshubah to the ksuba. So again, the halach is, yilokach ben karka, he should buy with this karka, v'roichel peiris, the karka is meshubah to the ksuba, the peiris are allowed to be eaten by the yavam. Hamechubar b'karka, let's say Peiris HaMechubar Mekarka. Let's say the brother who died left over fruit that's attached to the ground, which we had Rameyer in the previous Mishnah, so I'm not going to review this that much. Omer may shamanai some kame and yofim the peiris. We evaluate the field, how much it's worth with the fruit on it. The kame and yofim below peiris. What's the differential? Hamaiser, the differential is considered the principal of the wives. Vamaiser yulakach ben karka, the differential she should buy karka for oichel peiris. The Chum disagree, and they say peiris and mechubarim karka are considered metaltlin, and metaltlin are not obligated to the ksuba, and shaloi, they're considered payers that are completely the yavams and have no connection to the ksuba. Hatlu shimin akarka. What about payers that are not attached to the ground? Ka kadim zochbem. As Rishonim explained, if the wife, prior to her husband's death, grabbed these payers, they become the wife's, and therefore the halacha is like this. Kadim hu, if the yavam put his hands on these peiris, zocha, they're his. Because they're like all other peiris that the Chachamim just taught us belong to the Yavam and are not obligated to the Ksuba. However, Kodmehi, if she put her hands on these peiris, and the Rishonim point out she has to put her hands on it prior to death of her husband, Yilokta Ben Kaka, so it's like peiris that she brings into the marriage, that the halach is that any peiris she brings into the marriage, we buy property with that, V'roichel peiris. Kansa, says the Mishnah, once the Yavam marries the Yavam, does Yibum, we learned this from Sech the Yavamis, Harei Kishtal Kaldova, she's considered his full-fledged wife. Although I did see a very, again, this is not very relevant to us, because we don't do Yibum anymore, but I saw a very interesting psak. We learned earlier in our Masechta that a husband is responsible for Oina. We learned the Gemara in great detail, how often a husband has to have relations with a wife. A Yavam, that as the Gemara told us so many times in Masechta Yavamis, his relations are l'shem mitzvah. So it's not the regular relations that exist between a husband and wife, and he could have less frequent relations. Kansa, harei kishtel chaldava, she's considered his full-fledged wife, but as we said earlier, b'vachtei ksubasa anichse ba'ala arishin. The ksuba obligation is not on his money, it's on the estate that he got from the first brother. Lo yoymelo, however, the yavam should not say to his yavama, after he marries her. I'm designating this money on the table for ksuba payment. Everything he took from his brother, he has to use for the ksuba. Continues the Mishnah. Every husband should not tell his wife, here your ksuba payment is designated. And the Rishonim, as we'll see in the Gemara, explain very simply why. What's the entire purpose of the ksuba? Should be returned for divorce. But if the husband already set aside the ksuba money, and it's set aside in a separate bank account that he's not using, so it'll be much easier for him to divorce. So that's why the Mishnah says, don't do that. All of the money that the brother, the Yavam, takes from his deceased brother, however, Girsha, if the Yavam divorces his Yavama, then it's like any husband and wife that his estate is obligated to pay the ksuba. And this, as we're going to learn in the Gemara, is a way for the husband, for the Yavam, not to have all of the money that he inherited from his brother tied up in the ksuba, divorce her and remarry her, and then it'll be like any couple that he don't have to have separate money designated for the ksuba.